You've been searching for answers, wandering in the dark, looking for that glimmer of light that resonates with your soul and spirit. As you step into this new era that some indigenous people refer to as the Rainbow Bridge, without a compass, without a guide, yet needing some help to navigate your way through this spiritual maze, look no further. We've got the map. The Searcher's Roadmap. Now here's your host for The Searcher's Roadmap, Rhonda Harris.
Hello, listeners. This is the special edition of The Searcher's Roadmap, to which from here on out will also be known as The Roadmap for Seekers, and will be on the Harmony radio station soon as well with these archived shows. I'm looking forward to doing this to bring out the most that we can in regards to what Spirit is bringing to the table. Today, our guest is Tom Carroll. He is the author of The Oracle Guidance for Growing a Soul. Tom and I will be discussing the 10 Project. He claims is a method of developing surrender. Sorry, listeners, my dog has decided to freak out on the squirrels outside. Just a second. Sorry about that. So Tom's going to come in and tell us about the 10 Project and how it works with prayer and meditation and how it's changing the wisdom in the world. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
How are you?
All is well this morning. It's a bright, almost sunny day in Oregon.
Well, we just got through getting almost 7 foot of snow where I live, so it's trying to get sunny, but it's still wanting to snow some.
Okay.
So tell us about what got you on this project, the 10 Project, and writing the book, The Oracle Guidance for Growing a Soul.
Well, there are two completely separate projects. The Oracle was in response to needing a birthday gift. Excuse me, it was a Christmas gift for my niece, and it turned into something that wasn't really appropriate for a young woman, but as she grows older, maybe she'll appreciate it. Then the 10 Project is an outgrowth of a lifelong study, concern for the, let's call it, the mechanics of who we are as human beings, as, you know, some likes to say, spiritual beings having a human experience. Many ways to get into this, but let me tell it this way. It occurred to me at one point that this discursive prayer, you know, the way we pray and ask for things, that we do most talking, it didn't make much sense if we're talking to God, divine source that knows everything already. So without knowing the language, without knowing the territory, I began to do began to be involved in silent prayer. There are other words for it, but silent prayer. I would just simply wait, made a transaction, a promise before the divine, and I would just simply wait. And I began to be woken up at 3:30. Oddly, the phone would ring just once, or some odd thing would happen, and I'd be woken up. And 3 in the morning is a very special time when something about the world just goes very quiet, and I would go literally into my closet and wait, and I find myself being drawn deeper and deeper into silence, into surrender, as I began to see what it was. And in the process of that, I actually woke up for the first time. I experienced being alive. Now, anyone who's had that experience will know what I'm talking about. Others will think that I'm speaking figuratively, but there's a level in us that is more deeply aware than our everyday walking around selves, our personalities as we know them. And so in this surrender, in this quietness, I began to realize that there's great power, and it's just simply waiting, resident in our heart mind, this literal physiological link in our chest area between the physical and the extra dimensional, all very natural, but separated from the everyday personality by the weight of our thoughts and our opinions. So having realized that there's a big difference between asking for things, going before divinity, and asking for a Cadillac, as the song goes, as opposed to simply going in and waiting, I realized that there is this extra-dimensional knowledge that God really wants to get out. And all of this was combined with, as I had explained in a previous program on this channel, with memories of Art Bell's mass consciousness experiments. He had asked his audience to all think about rain in an area that had no rain, and amazingly, rain happened. And several incidents like this led Art to back away from it because of what he called, or what were actually unintended consequences, in this case, too much rain. And he realized that he tapped into something that was larger than he realized and had potential consequences that he didn't want to be responsible for. So in an act of responsibility, he decided not to do that again. My thought was simply that having identified that divinity is inside of us, wants to break out into this world, that there should be a way to tap into this power. I almost said harness, but harness is the wrong word, but to tap into that in such a way that there are no harmful unintended consequences. So that led to a progressive thinking into it, and it occurred to me that what was wrong with the Art Bell experiments was that individual ideas of what should happen were overlaid. They were thinking specifically of a hurricane and averting disaster. Everyone had their own idea about what was good and what should happen. And as a result of that, they weren't really in agreement. Now, I'm skipping over a lot of stuff quickly, but the next feature of this is the idea that with two or three, or you know, however large a group can come together, if you can come together in agreement, then special things happen. Now, as I speak, I'll speak as a person who was raised with a Christian background, in a Christian background, but anyone who has an allergy to that, please overlook it and realize that the things that we'll be talking about are universal. Another feature of my thinking was that given the condition of the world, this would be a great time for a messianic event. Scripture talks about the fact that it's my people perish, the words go, for a lack of vision. And what we really need is a unifying vision, something clear enough and strong enough that people nationwide, if not worldwide, would begin to cleave to a higher ethic. So a messianic event. But, you know, what would that actually look like? How would that come about? That's, of course, that's up for debate. But given the fact that we're realizing that people need to do their own inner work, and as they do, they come into contact with the reality of the divine within. So it seems to me that what's really being asked of us is that we do this inner work, we learn surrender before the divine, and then come together. And rather than a specific individual coming back, which may happen in some way, but concurrent with that, at a minimum, we need people, the individuals in our world, to come together in surrender and fulfill the injunctions that we find in Scripture across culture and time, that say things like, if my people will surrender, if my people will humble themselves and turn from their ways and appeal to me, then I'll hear. This is Source speaking, the divine. This is God speaking. Then I'll hear and I'll turn and I'll heal their land. So all of these things came together, and I named this the Ten Project based on the understanding in Judaism that prayer is best effected with a group of ten or more, a minyan. So the Ten Project, ten people praying at once. So I've thrown a whole lot of stuff out there. How does are we making any sense?
You're making a lot of sense, and you know, a lot of people haven't heard about, you know, ten or more gathered together. They hear from the New Testament, you know, two or more where they're gathered, I shall be. But, you know, you're right in regards to the minyan, and that, you know, people need to spread it larger than one or, you know, two or more. You know, it needs to be ten or more, and, you know, to be worldwide, to which is why I do this show, is to bring this information to the world that hasn't gotten out there for one reason or another. And, you know, it's very much needed.
Well, I talk about 10 or more, and I think of that as being the goal, the ideal. But to get started, if you had two, if you had three, you would have done something remarkable. Now, one of the things that has to be, that needs to be understood, is that when Scripture, from whatever source, speaks of agreement, we're talking about something from the divine, and this surrender is not a casual thing. We're talking about the divine that has laid out the structure of the world with such precision and specificity that when the divine says surrender, again, it's not casual. And so I continually refer people back to the car passing trick, an article that was written. I'm not actually sure of who the author is, but I heard of it first from Stan Tenen of the Meru Foundation. But you can read the car passing trick on my website, sacredspace.org. And it gives a clear picture of the profound, to use that word, nature of the surrender that's being asked for. Let's use the word apositionality, surrendering all of our ideas about what's good, about God, about Source itself, genuinely surrendering at depths all of our opinions, all of our hopes, all of our fears, and coming together in a way that that fulfills request that we genuinely do humble ourselves. Now, a picture that I like to draw is the difference between lamplight and laser. Lamps, of course, are very nice if you want to read a book at night, but a laser is orders of magnitude more powerful. It's all light, waves, photons of light, but a laser, of course, has the light has been subjected through various crystals and mirrors to where it's coherent. It's all of the photons are in phase and the same frequency. So now you have this condition that we call coherence, which is genuine agreement. Agreement, again, at depth. So what we want is people who will surrender all of their ideas and come together as one, two, or hopefully ten in agreement. Another picture that's helpful is, let's say you and I are going to pray for someone, and I always bring up Mary Sue, whoever Mary Sue is. So Mary Sue is sick, we're going to pray for her, pray silently, and then we come back together and compare what we prayed. And both of our prayers, both of our requests for Mary Sue are going to be good things, but we'll use different words, we'll have different ideas. You may pray that she lives specifically. I may pray that she simply gets better. However we pray, it's not going to be exactly the same. So I realized that the only way that two people can ever actually agree at depth, coherently, is if we surrender all of our ideas. It sounds a little cold, but when we realize that we're addressing the divine, which is fundamentally good beyond imagining, if we surrender all of our hopes and our fears and our aspirations to divine goodness, then we could not have done anything better. We couldn't have prayed anything better for Mary Sue. So what I'm talking about is in the case where we're praying for someone or about something, to give up our ideas about what's good, what's necessary. That's a difficult thing for people to do. Between this show and the previous one that was done last week, I thought about this and wondered if we should possibly engage people in some sort of activity along this line. And it occurred to me that given the wide range of problems in the world, that there were all manner of things that we could focus on. But then it hit me, you know, slap your forehead. I could have had a V8 realization. And the realization was that completely violates the basic idea, and that is that we need to come before this divine power that spun galaxies and universes into being and do as commanded, to pray, thy will be done, not ours. So there we have the ideas of surrender and of coherence, of surrendering to divine goodness, giving up all of our ideas with the understanding that God is good. And if we simply give it all up, then we can expect something good to happen.
And things are
happening.
He took
a break.
No. Things are good. I'm not taking a break. I keep muting my mic so that you don't hear me breathing in the background.
Well, it's okay if you breathe.
But what I'm thinking of is, you know, like I do Shawls of Love and Hugs, which is a project of infusing shawls with prayer and compassion and hope and love and baby blankets and blankets that go to hospices and nursing homes. And they're given to, you know, to babies in the ICU and people that are on cancer units or infusion clinics, and to give them that hope. And I think this project that you are doing is about hope, you know, and what better thing to ask for the world than to give the world hope in this darker time when people are searching to see, you know, where is this light that's under the bushel basket, you know, and they're not realizing that that light is inside them. You know, it's like a prism.
There you go. We're told that everything that we need, everything that pertains to life and goodness, is resident in us, that the kingdom of heaven has already come, and that is in our hearts. And as we then surrender our small ideas of how that would work out and allow divine goodness to come out of us, then that is reason for hope. That is potentially this unifying principle, this bright light that is seen and understood widely enough, is reason for the world to begin taking hope again.
And with that hope, it gives us so much more to look forward to, or to continue on and to be resilient throughout these situations. You know, because what I found is that through my illnesses, I've learned a lot, especially in the last 2 years of losing, you know, my ability to walk and then regaining it, you know, and it's just been one of these things where it's like, you know, there wouldn't have been any hope, I don't know that I would have gotten through it. It's the hope that keeps that alive and keeps it moving forward and growing bigger. You know, and so, you know, with that, you know, the healing energy and the, you know, the releases of wisdom that come from this hope, you know, is amazing. You know, how would you look at that?
Well, hope is very powerful, and we need to have hope. Of course, we would just, you know, roll over and dry up if we didn't have reason to hope.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond hope is the actual experience of the fact that there is a power resident in us that is working for our good. We don't know how that's supposed to work out, but if we will trust that, then, well, what I'm working towards is I want to give an example of where this has actually been experienced. So beyond hope, there's experience, and an actual experience with this, of course, reinforces the hope and reminds us that it has worked before and it will work again. So something that happened years ago was that with a group, we actually engaged in this prolonged period of waiting before the divine. And it was very sweet, and we all enjoyed the time. And after 45 minutes or an hour, however long it lasted, we began to get up and prepare ourselves to leave, when suddenly something washed in to the room, and we were literally knocked to our knees and faces. And for the next 5 or 10 minutes, no one could get up. No one could speak. No one could get up. What we had released was this divine energy, and the fact that, you know, we couldn't speak and we couldn't get up, it didn't tell us that anything specific was being done, but we were being shown that we really had tapped into something that was real, that was reproducible, something that the divine wants from us. What I like to talk about also is the fact that people own only one thing. We come into this life not by our own will, and we don't know how long we'll be here, but while we're here, we can choose. That's the one thing that we have that we can give, is our power to choose. And in surrendering, we have actually given over this one thing. Divinity, Source, God, whatever people are comfortable calling it, is giving all the time, sustaining life at every level. We, on the other hand, have this one thing that we can give. However, if we give all that we have to that which is already given all of its self to us, then a marriage, we'll say, has been consummated, the marriage made in heaven. And it's from that, us getting out of the way, us giving over our will to the divine will, that we can actually pray, "Thy will be done." And again, believing, knowing that God is good, we can expect good things.
And when those good things come to us, that's the time to be grateful and to spread the word, or to continue to brighten that light. Am I correct?
Well, one would certainly hope so. One of the features of the 10 Project is the need for this not to just occur once, for it to go over center. Now, when I begin talking about this next part, oftentimes it sounds confusing, but I remind people of the phenomenon of birds flocking and schools of fish doing the fantastic dance that they do in synchrony.
Mm-hmm.
There's math that can be used to identify that behavior, and it's the same math of the toroidal form, which is the smoke ring. And the interesting feature about a smoke ring is the fact that it rolls in on itself and comes back out the same. And so when you're looking at a flock of birds, when you've identified the math behind that, you see that to have birds flock or schools of fish school, that you need a certain amount of information in the system. In this case, you need a certain number of people involved. So if two or three come together, that's a good thing. If they come together in genuine coherence, that's an even better thing. But there is some number of people that, like a flock of birds, it begins to take on a life of its own, go over center, so that this 10 project, once affected, would hopefully take on a life of its own. How that would spread, I don't know. But just like the smoke ring, once you get a certain amount of energy in motion in this way, it does replicate itself. So whether or not it would be a larger and larger number of people hearing and understanding and beginning to practice, that, of course, would be the most obvious way. But we definitely want to see something that would spread throughout the world and reach, hopefully, what Malcolm Gladwell identified in his book, Tipping Point. It doesn't take all of the people, but it takes a certain number, a certain amount of information in the system, whether it be a political system, a social movement. And when you reach that number, then, again, the phenomenon, the idea takes on a life of its own and grows beyond the original group.
So then that's when it starts expanding out into the world and more groups of 10 will be happening on different levels.
Well, I have to say that this is all speculation. We've
right.
not seen it. We're simply looking at principles. The tipping principle, the tipping point, is real. We know that. I believe it was the American Revolution. Maybe that was one of the examples that was actually used in his book. Not everyone was behind that, but I believe it was about 10% of the people. And when that amount of people, that number of people became involved, began to work towards this, then we saw the birth of this nation. Pretty big deal, birth of the nation.
Yeah, birth of the nation.
It didn't take all of the people, you bet.
Yeah, and look at all the other different changes we've seen in the world over the last 20 years, and it's because things get to a certain level and then they come back and then it grows a little more and it grows a little more, and it spreads some more. And you're seeing more and more of that happening, especially since, there's been a big energy shift since 2012. And it seems like since then, things have been moving even more. And it's interesting that you're talking about the 10 Project, and you've been working on this for 10 years, am I correct?
Well, 10, 12, something
yeah.
like that, yes. The idea has been, in my mind, I've been talking to people for a long time, and it's just now beginning to, I won't say take hold, but I'm finding that people are interested, people are understanding what I'm talking about and recognizing
mm-hmm.
it as a possibility.
And they're looking at it more as something to start researching, do you think? Are you seeing that people are contacting you wanting more information about it?
Well, not yet, but let's hope that people will either contact me via the website or your
mm-hmm.
show.
And can you
my email
tell
address,
the listeners?
If I can pull that out, pardon?
Yeah,
yeah.
Can you
yeah.
let the listeners know about your website and how to email you and what your contact number is?
I would like for you to go, or listeners to go to the website to see the car passing trick, to read that
mm-hmm.
and understand the nature of the surrender, the depth of surrender, a positionality that I'm talking about. Beyond that, though, contact me via email at tom@sacredspace.org. Tom, T-O-M, sacredspace.org. I'd love to hear from people.
That would be great.
Yeah, something interesting about this is to recognize that, yeah, this does seem to be an idea whose time has come, if not, not necessarily because I'm talking about it. In the last 40 years, we've seen something amazing happen in the world in that all of the world's religions have given up all their secrets. It used to be
mm-hmm.
that the core teachings of Buddhism, Judaism, whichever, were held secret and only for initiates, those deemed worthy. But now they're available for everyone. And as
mm-hmm.
I mentioned this messianic event, it's important to recognize that be it Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Taoism, Hinduism, Zoroastrianism, even the Rastafarians have a messianic legend, a messianic story.
Mm-hmm.
And it all centered around a time when the world is in great turmoil, and this central figure comes back and saves us all. But we're coming to understand that we are that central figure. As we mature in our, call it spiritual development, we come to a greater understanding, and hopefully at some point an individual experiences the truth, fundamental truth of the fact that we are one. Paradoxically, we're responsible for our individual bodies, minds, our lives, but under that or overarching, consciousness is one. And that which is unique or common to all of us is consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting way to recognize that is ask someone what they did a month ago on this day at this time, and almost universally, they won't be able to tell you a thing. What they can tell you, though, was that they were there in the respect. They were aware. They know that 2 months ago they were doing something. So what was it that links our activities back through our lives and this present moment? It's our basic awareness. It is the basic awareness. And that is common to every person. We share that. As we open up, we can begin to share it with others. Others may have had this startling experience where you look in another person's eyes and you see yourself. It could be quite a jolt, or it can be very reassuring to recognize.
Exactly.
At bottom, we're not separate. We're not alone.
I'm going to stop for just a second and let the listeners know that if they want to call in and ask questions, they can call in at 1-347-838-9142. Press 1 once. It'll bring you into the back office so that I can see you and put you in queue so that you can ask your questions or comments. Tom, can you tell people how to go about getting into this prayerful surrender place? Or how you've done it?
Sure. It's really quite easy. It just takes a little time. It's no different than silent sitting meditation. And in the Zen tradition, that's not drifting away into some ethereal world. That's presence. That's developing an ever keener presence of this very moment. So it's a very sharpened focus on the on present time. You're right here. However, in doing that, in this case, what you're doing is having a, let's say, a conversation. You're communing with the divine. Now that sounds a little confusing. We have to realize that that God shows up as the, let's say, in first, second, and third person. We can recognize I am, the great I am. You know, Moses, the burning bush, asks God who he is, and the word comes back, I am that I am. And we begin to suspect that what Moses was experiencing was that he was, in fact, I am. So that's God in first person. In third person, that we can look out across the world and the world of nature and see life springing up in everything that grows. Sometimes that's referred to as the pagan tradition. Nature worship is recognizing God in all of nature. The other aspect is second person, and that's I, thou. That's where when I talk about first, second, third person, it's the difference between I personally and then you and me, which make a we, you and I, and then third person is they, or the great it. So God in nature is it. God first person is I am, which we are and have been invited lawfully to recognize that we are I am. But the other part that gets ignored all too often is I thou, recognizing something greater than us. And in this process of surrender, I would simply sit, have a little cushion, sit. Sometimes I'd find myself prostrated, but I would be waiting before the divine. And as thoughts would come up, I would simply set them aside. No matter how pressing they were, I would set them aside. We'll do that later. We'll think about that later. And progressively, everything would slow down, and I would find myself in closer and closer communion with the divine. I would be surrendering. And I wish there were time, because this took time and some very interesting things happened. But the principal thing that I took away was the realization, the understanding of the biblical verses that speak of, that simply say that if we don't love God, cleave to God closer than our mothers or fathers or families, then we're not fit to be disciples. We're not fit to be called by his name, as it said. And that's, I would say, archaic language. It's figurative language. It's not cruel. It's not mean as it sounds. It's just simply a recognition that at various times, an hour a day, we'll say, in our prayer times, we need to give over it depth and experience both profound unity with the divine and the recognition that there is something greater than us. And the relationship of I-thou begins to give over, and you experience deep connection with I am. So the process then is just simply sitting, waiting patiently, giving over thoughts as they would come up. And my transaction was, I'm not going to speak. I'm not going to say anything. If you have something to say, that's fine. If you don't, I'm just giving over this time to you. And that was all that was involved. That was all that was required. And I was taken deeper and deeper into surrender, as we'll call it. It's much easier. It would be much clearer to the audience for them to, again, go to sacredspace.org. And I put the car passing trick right up the top of all the articles, so it's easy to find. And read this and realize that the nature, the depth of this surrender. And begin to do it yourselves. One of the things that's spoken of in the car passing trick is the fact that if you're telling people that you're doing it, it gets ruined. And if you're, of course, ego-tripping about the whole thing, it's spoiled. And that ends up giving, I found that very hopeful in that it shows us that we don't have to come together in a group. We don't have to meet at my house on Thursday. As people recognize this and begin to do it on their own, anywhere in the world, at any time, then the power of this is going to flow. And as we do it in larger numbers, the power is going to be magnified. You still there?
Sorry. I thought I had unmuted myself. No, I'm listening so intently because it shows to me that, you know, surrender comes on so many different levels, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, soulfully, you know, that we have to, you know, it's not so much denying of the self or the ego, but it's more of putting the ego on the back burner instead of letting it be up in the front all the time, driving the bus, so to speak.
Well, there you go. It's often said in spiritual circles that we have to kill the ego, we have to transcend the ego, and that needs to be understood in context. Just as you say, the ego can no longer be allowed to drive the bus. That's caused us nothing but trouble. But the ego can't go away. A person with no ego has no frame of reference, can't operate successfully in this world, and we call them psychotic. So we need our egos. God bless our egos. what we need to put them in place, put them in context. They need to be our servant, not our master.
Exactly, because when it's the master, we tend to get in a lot of trouble, is what I found. You know, I can't afford to... Go on ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you just said is something really important to remember. And that's that for these last 100 years, several thousand years, the best and brightest minds have been engaged in trying to solve the problems of the world. And it's easy to see that that's just not working. Mm-hmm. We need to do something else. And so this, radical as it is, radical is the idea of surrender as being the solution to the world's problems. There are evidentially and scripturally plenty of evidence that we have been asked to enter into this relationship with the divine. And, of course, there's evidence that we're not going to get this done with our own thinking.
Mm-hmm. Our own thinking's gotten us into a lot of trouble. And what I've seen, though, is that if we would look over history and learn from it rather than be disgusted with it or upset about it, you know, and move it forward, you know, doing something differently rather than constantly being at war with each other and trying to prove each other wrong or right or whatever. It's like we're all here. We're like a jewel, and if you take out any facet of the jewel, then you've damaged the beauty of the jewel. Whereas, you know, we all need each other, no matter what our religions are, no matter what our integrations are, you know, and go from there. And how do you see that?
Well, I what you're saying is true. I would simply say that in learning from history, the most valuable thing that we can learn is that, just as I said, our best efforts to think our way out of our problems has not been successful. At the same time, there is a divine source that spun everything into being, that that sustains life. And this whole project is predicated on the premise that God has simply been waiting for us to give over our best ideas, to give over this one thing that we own, our will, and allow life, allow God, allow profound divine goodness to show it us what peace on earth would look like. Again, as I between this and the last show, I was thinking as to whether or not, you know, we should identify some particular problem in the world, and California came up, the fire, or the drought down there. Now, I don't want anybody to seize on that, and I don't want to make more of that than I should. But let's say that we were to have focus on the drought in California and done an Art Bell type of experiment. And let's say that rain did come, and using an overly dramatic example, but one that will serve the purpose, let's say that the drought ends and that California returns to prosperity in every sense. It would seem that would be a very good thing. On the other hand, and God forbid, but let's say that the drought does continue and people begin to move out of California. Let's say that in 5 years there's a catastrophic earthquake down there. The people that moved, maybe a large number of them, the people that moved would have been spared from that earthquake and the damage and the potential for death and destruction. Now, again, that's an overly dramatic example, but it does serve to show us that our ideas of good are not necessarily good. We just don't know. We can't see around the corner.
Right.
And for that reason, it's time for us to give over all of our good ideas and recognize that there is a power at work that has initiated life, that sustains life, and it has proven itself to be good. The problems in this world, people would argue with that and say, well, you know, my niece got sick and my husband died and all these things and, you know, where was God? That's a difficult sort of an argument, but again, we can't say what's actually good for that person. We can't say what divine timing really had in mind. We just don't know what's actually the best for the Mary Sues that we would pray for in the world. And it's best that we begin to look to a higher source and recognize, I keep coming back to this, the fundamental goodness of the life-giving source, and let that begin to rush out of this place inside of each one of us, our hearts, and as the scriptures say, heal our land.
Exactly. And there is ways to do that. I had a shaman that came out to Colorado in 2013. And in 2013, we were in a horrible drought here. All the reservoirs were 75% down, which means they had hardly any water in them. And that was in May of 2013. I met her in April. She started doing ceremonies in regards to healing the area and the tree population in this state. And we were in really bad fire problems in 2012, 2013. And on July 4th, she did a ceremony, and we watched the rain come in. And literally, it stayed and increased in through September to the point that we were flooding and all the reservoirs were back to full in a three-month time, or not even 3 months, probably 2.5 month time. So it can be done. It depends on how we approach it, you know, and it's also dependent upon, you know, what is it that spirit really wants. You know, she's from the bone tradition of Buddhism, so she's very, very old tradition. She'd been taken into the forest and taught what she knows at the ages of 7, 9, and 11. You know, but she did it with no expectation, no, you know, putting it out there and saying it has to be done. It was, you know, thy will be done, you know, whatever's best for this area, do it. And I think we could approach it that way. And, you know, and there's a lot of areas throughout the world and throughout the United States that need prayers so that divine intervention comes in, whatever intervention that is. You know, we may not understand it at the time, but we'll be able to see it later in a much clearer essence. You know, as they say, hindsight's 20/20.
Well, it would be very rude of me to contradict my host on this show. Well, may I contradict you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. You're right. There are so many problems, and we, you know, we all have our particular concerns. What the 10 Project is, though, is something, it's of a higher order. Mm-hmm. It is human beings finally giving over and saying, thy will, not mine.
Right.
So whether it's a drought, whether it's disease, pestilence, mm-hmm. whatever pestilence might mean, we're really not prepared to know all of the outcomes of a solution of our own imagining.
Mm-hmm.
Giving over at depth, saying thy will to that which is omniscient, all-knowing, mm-hmm. all-powerful, and all-present, giving over to that power and letting the decisions being made at that level is, again, like the laser, it's orders of magnitude more powerful than anything we might come up with. Now, your acquaintance, your shaman friend, mm-hmm. Apparently did affect something of great good. Let's hope that the flooding wasn't too extensive. But it's the same thing that Art Bell did. And as we remember, Art said, enough of this. We're playing with something that we don't really understand. Mm-hmm. And sooner or later, we're going to cause more trouble than we ever hope to solve. The 10 Project is predicated on the idea that this power is at work, but we need to allow it to make the decisions in total so that we mm-hmm. don't have these unintended consequences. And even more than that, not doing it out of fear, but just simply recognizing that our small conceptions of ourselves and the way we see the world through these lenses of our fractured individual personalities can never appreciate the whole picture. We're just simply not equipped to make these decisions about what it is, you know, what's wrong with the world and how it should be solved.
That's so true. And we're down to the last 8 minutes of the show. Is there anything pressing that's coming up for you to share with us? And then for our listeners, we'll be doing another show tomorrow to continue this conversation. Please take the time to look at the car passing view that's on his website so that you can have questions. Say that again.
No, I'm sorry. Excuse me, I interrupted. It's the car passing trick.
Yes. And then that way they could bring their questions and comments into the back and be addressed individually.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And go on ahead.
We're over talking each other.
We are.
Forgive me. Listen, it's called the car passing trick because, and as people will read, this is supposed to be approached with a degree of frivolity, with a lack of seriousness. And again, if you read it, you'll understand what I'm talking about, and you'll understand the reasons for it. We don't want to take ourselves too seriously here. We're engaging something of incredible power, and the topic is very, very serious. But paradoxically, the appropriate way for we as individuals to come at this is in a very relaxed way and with, as he says, and as the author says, as a controlled folly, to have a little bit of fun with it.
And that's what this is about, too, is having fun while we still are doing a lot of different, you know, letting go of things. I think without joy, it makes it difficult to be able to see the daylight. And, you know, I think this brings joy to, I know it's brought joy to me to know that, you know, that there are things that are going on that involve prayer and meditation and surrender, you know, and that's a lot of what part of the world's problem is that we're all so full of me, myself, and I, rather than, you know, as you had described, the divine and the I am, that I am, that I am, you know, in such a beautiful way. And with that, could you wrap up with going back over the part about surrender and meditating so that the listeners can try it overnight, and then when they come back on the show tomorrow, they'll have some experience with it?
Well, let's do it this way. If listeners will go and read it, they'll be familiar and they'll be acquainted with the fact that this is something that takes a little practice. So whether it be myself or you or anyone else, we're not unfortunately going to come back as experts tomorrow, but a start is a start. Let me say something else. I had the privilege of watching a movie recently at a film festival, and the director, the filmmaker, was trying to identify how world peace could be achieved. Mm-hmm. In his frustration, he finally came to understand the wisdom of Gandhi's words when he said that we have to be personally the peace that we want to see around us, to see in the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's been tossed around again frivolously, but it ends up being quite true. And the movie ends with people realizing that the most responsible action that we can affect is to do our own homework, to become this peace in ourselves, to become at peace with ourselves and with our families, with the world around us. So what in one sense would seem to be selfish, the ultimate selfishness, actually is the most responsible action that we can affect for the well-being of all those around us. If we want to see healing and peace in the world, we need to individually learn to give over to that which is resident inside of us, life, life spelled with a capital L, which is all-knowing, all-powerful, and very, very good.
Yes, and I will, I'm looking at this. So the Muir Foundation was involved with the car passing trick?
Well, I want to be careful. I don't want to involve Stan.
Right.
And this Miro Foundation specifically. That's why I put the particular article with credits up on my website.
Okay,
Stan,
that's what I was wondering.
He's a very serious mathematician. I'm not sure that he would appreciate being associated with this. So look at the car passing trick as I posted it in full at sacredspace.org. Anybody with questions can contact me, tom@sacredspace.org, and then we'll carry on tomorrow and see where we go.
Exactly. And with that, we're at the end of our time. If listeners want to call in again tomorrow, it's at 1-347-838-9142. Press 1 once, and you'll be able to be in the queue. This will be archived into the back office of Blog Talk Radio, and you can access it and download it and re-listen to it as much as you want so that you can pick it apart, listen to it, you know, gather those little kernels of information that you may have missed or you want to look into deeper, and then go to Tom's website at sacredspace.org and check on the car passing trick and look at his website and see where you're at with it and see, you know, what goes on with that. And then if you have any questions, you can also send them in to the searchersroadmap@gmail.com, and I can take your questions and forward them on to Tom. Or you can reach me on Facebook, Rhonda Harrison, and I have the show listed there, and you can just list your questions there on the Facebook page on my timeline for the Tom Carroll show on the Searchers Roadmap for today. And then we can pick up with this again tomorrow. And with that, I'm going to close out with some nice music, and we will have you all back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 11 a.m. Rocky Mountain time, 12 p.m. Central time, and 1 p.m. on the East Coast on Eastern Standard Time. And with that,
Rhonda,
we're going to close.
Tell us the contact number again, how callers can reach you?
347-838-9142. And that will bring you into the guest call-in, and I can see you in the back. And then when you have a question, press 1 once, and I can be able to see you in the back and recognize that you have a question. And then I can put you live on the air so that you can talk to me. Okay? Everyone have a wonderful day. Make it the best that you can.
Thank you, Rhonda.
You're very welcome, Tom.